This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're talking about things that'll ruin your Commander nights. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we're talking about stuff that's going to ruin your Commander games and ruin your Commander nights. And joining me to do this, we got the full crew here this week, Phil and Tomer and Krim. Welcome back, Krim. We missed you for a week or so. How's everyone doing today?
Very well.
Oh, I'm good. I'm excited to talk about the various ways I ruin Commander nights.
I do. Some
I'm an expert at it. Even.
I'm sorry.
We had to wait to for Krim to get back because he knows a thing or two about ruining like Commander nights.
Whoa!
I'm just kidding, Krim. You're one of my favorite people to play Commander with, but occasionally you do stacks me out of the game or annihilate me with Eldrazi. You know, things like that happen every once in a while.
Whoa, dude! I don't know. I have annihilated you a lot, but that's because you seem to... I don't want to say that some people, you know, just
I'm just
are
asking
more,
for it. Yeah, I'm annihilatorable.
It's more appealing to annihilate some of us more than others. And I don't know why that is.
I just got that annihilatable kind of face, I guess. Yeah, what can you do?
Yeah.
It's not the history.
Anyway, we got some sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way immunity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to FoilArmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So we recently talked about powerful cards that we refuse to play. And somehow our top comment comes from some Minecraft player 8557 says, I'm gonna let someone else have it this week.
Crazy meta.
If you're not familiar, yes, this is we are like next level meta
now.
Legend
return.
Yeah, we might need to like debuff some Minecraft player 8557 somehow from comment of the week because I feel like it's been like a month in a row that he's
let him cook.
And this time
let him cook. It's fine.
He wasn't even trying. He was actually saying I don't want it this week, and they still like 1,000 upvotes or something.
Anyone
to put
challenge
it to the top,
them in the comment section. Yeah, let's see if anyone can dethrone the king.
Someone rise up and take on some Minecraft player. But thank you, some Minecraft player, for always leaving a comment. Anyway, let's talk about things that can ruin Commander nights. And honestly, the reason we wanted to do this topic, the biggest reason, is Tomer, you were talking about how you've been thinking a little bit lately about time equity. So I think that's maybe a good place to start with something that can ruin Commander nights. So Tomer, what is time equity and how could it ruin a Commander night?
Okay, so time equity is the concept of in Commander, people kind of expect that everyone will have an equal amount of time to play the game together. So that means like, you know, if you are playing a four-player game of Commander and it's 1 hour, there's four of you, then each of you, what, takes
15 minutes.
Divided 15 minutes. Yeah, I could divide by 60. There we go, by four. Thank you.
I gotcha.
Like everybody gets roughly that amount of time. And there's a lot of cards that you'll see like that are like on the EDH rec salt scale that don't really make sense unless you start thinking about time equity, like extra turns. Extra turns, notoriously very salty cards. What does that do really? You take an extra turn, you just have more time to play the game of Magic. And maybe it's too powerful of a spell, but I don't think people are upset about it by its power level. It's just the fact that you're taking more time at the table, and that's where it comes to like time equity. And then also I was thinking about like why do people hate Storm so much, and it's like it comes down I think to the same thing where you're just watching one person play the game of Magic instead of everybody having an equal amount of time. So I was like really thinking about that. I'm gonna make a solo video on that, but I want to hear your thoughts on this idea of time equity and things that are just like taking up too much time at the table compared to everybody else? Like, what do you guys think about that?
I gotta say, I think that the solve score thing is interesting. I had never thought of it that way before, but now you mention that, is that the problem with most like stacks pieces and all the salty card? Like, is Winter Orb a card that people hate because it makes you not play, or is it a card that people also hate because your game's going to take forever when you only get to untap one land each turn? Or like a Nether Void, it just makes all spells get countered unless you pay three more mana. In theory, it should never counter a spell, right? You just pay three more mana for each of your spells and your game progresses as normally, but it's going to make the game take way longer. Or even Mass Land Destruction, the game's going to take way longer. Like, how much of the salt of like the most salty stacks pieces do you think is their power level or the fact that they keep you from playing? How much of it is they just drag the game on super long? Like, do you think time equity applies there, Tomer?
I think that's a different thing. I think it's okay. Like another thing casuals really like is just let me do the thing. Like, I came here, you know, I got to play Magic once every 2 weeks or something like that. You know, I had a rough day at work. I want my deck to do my dinosaur deck. I just want to see some dinosaurs on the board. You know, not necessarily I need to win. It's just like, let my dinosaur deck put some cool dinosaurs on the battlefield before I die. And I think like the Winter Orbs and stuff like that, they prevent you from putting the dinosaurs onto the battlefield in your dinosaur deck. And that feels kind of bad because that's like you're expecting to get some dinosaurs down in your dinosaur deck. And I think that's a little bit different.
So kind of separate.
I feel like some Storm and like Super Friends also has this issue too, where it's like, if Super Friends has a lot of Planeswalkers on the battlefield, you're going to have to start thinking a lot about like, okay, I plus one this, I minus one this. Oh, I drew an extra card off this. Now I have to reevaluate. And everybody's like, well, I'm sitting here waiting to play my dinosaurs and you're not passing the turn to me. You know, it's like,
Dinosaur player wants to untap.
It's kind
and
of related,
play like,
I think.
The dinosaur player wants to untap dinosaur, and play like one 8 drop and pass the turn. Their turn's going to take 10 seconds. It's like, untap, guess, here's a big fan.
That is not the dinosaur thing, experience right? anymore.
If you just like say like can the dinosaur deck play dinosaurs, I think that will explain a lot of the salt cards. And I do think like Armageddon, like stacks and all that kind of falls into the same thing. Like, are these cards stopping the dinosaur player from playing dinosaurs? If yes, it will be salty.
that makes a lot of sense.
Versus like Doomblade versus Counterspell. Oh my god, did this crack the code? Oh my god, Seth, you might be a genius
Counterspell,
the dinosaur didn't get to be on the board, right? But a Doomblade means that the dinosaur was on the board.
And then you don't see any.
That's fine.
You don't see Doomblades on the salt score, but you see Counterspells. Yeah, that is we might have figured it out, Tomer, with our powers combined. I would add like sacrifice decks to your list of things that can like really eat up time if you're doing like aristocratic loops and all the Blood Artist triggers and Sephiroth, and then I sack this and then I get back that. Mm. Also some artifact decks. I know the worst time equity decks I play regularly are like artifact combo decks with like Karak Clan Ironworks that just naturally lead to these like really big, oh, I sack stuff, and then how much mana do I have? Do I need to sack another thing? Then I play this thing and draw a card. So I think there's like several archetypes that can lead to those turns.
Decks, maybe if you like have like a Balin the Haymaker, I'm just throwing out a random card.
Who would play that?
An Academy Manufacturer tokens, and then every single time you tap the tokens, you draw a card, and you're let me think about what I drew. And maybe I make some more tokens, and then I could tap the tokens to draw more cards and make more mana. And then let me think about the card I drew. An hour passes, and I still haven't had a chance to play a dinosaur in my dinosaur deck.
It's Editant.
Maybe not. Just like a hypothetical stuff.
Actually happened in real life, right? Tomer, you're just making this up.
It sounds very specific.
Let me ask you, Tomer. So this is actually referencing a Commander Clash game that is either live now or will be going live in the near future. by the time this goes up, which is like in a little while in the future. Sure. So, but anyway, let me ask you, Tomer. So yes, I play some very loopy decks sometimes. I was trying to outvalue Phil, and I think I achieved my goal. But I also took very, very long turns. How much of that problem, Tomer, was the deck? How much of it was me not playing a real win con. Like, could I have salved your issues with the big time equity loopy turns by playing a Craterhoof Behemoth or something like that, rather than being like, I know I win eventually. Like, once I get my engine set up, I literally can draw my entire deck. Sooner or later, I'm going to hit a finisher that's going to drain you out of, like, a Mirkwood Bats or something. It's going to drain you out of the game. Yeah, it's going to take a while, but it is inevitable. Is it as simple as that? Like, if I just trade out one card for a Craterhoof, and instead of having to go all the way through my deck, I just go till I find a hoof and win, like, does that solve the problem?
Devil's advocate here, I gotta ask, why is the onus on you, the person who's demonstrating the loop that will eventually get there, need to go and put the Craterhoof one?
Mm-hmm.
Conceding is free. Time equity is real.
You're a sweaty player. You know you're not going to concede unless you see the win con. Are you ever conceding unless you see the win? You're not.
I mean, I what are you talking about? I button mash concede so fast. Like, I'm like, I don't even, if you're like, you don't even have the win con in your deck, I'll just concede. Like, it's
there's
fine.
No way. I don't believe you. No way.
It is commander, but
you only
but
concede if you see the win.
Okay. But let me ask you this. All right. If Seth here's like, I can get to it. It just takes time, but I know I can get to it. Do you concede? I would concede.
But we don't know he's going to get to it because he's just like, he's going, he just, whatever he draws. Like, if he's like, okay, I can draw my entire deck. It's like, okay, do you have a win condition in your deck? It's like, fine. But he's like, oh, no, I have a card. It's going to draw me a card. And then I'm going to make three more treasures, which will allow me to draw more cards and make a couple more treasures and stuff like that. And it's like, well, I can't concede to that. It's like,
he could hit
a bunch of lands. I don't know.
It's one of the, it's like the KCI problem, essentially, Krim, where it's like not literally infinite. I just draw my deck right now.
Like,
it's
a
more
70%
like
chance.
Functionally, well, maybe like 90 something percent. Like, I think a higher percent chance than that. But yeah, like a relative, very high percent chance that I get to draw my deck and win. But I could draw 10 lands in a row and fizzle or something, or 5 lands in a row and fizzle. There's some chance that you could run really poorly and not have it happen.
But that sounds like really low, like the odds.
I mean, the odds are, I would say that the odds were 90%+ that I like, but we'll go through my entire deck from the scenario we're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because it's not like a actual like loss, that makes sense. But at the same time, 90% and like the ability to just keep drawing and keep demonstrating the loop, I'm willing to bet that even if you did fizzle, we are not winning. Like,
you can talk about it. Like, if you say, yeah, can you, it's realistically, what's your win con and what do you need to make it happen? And your answer is, I don't know, I'm just going to draw 10 more cards, create 10 more mana, and I need it. I would be, like, if the table says, okay, next game, draw 7. Yeah. That seems fair. But just saying scoop is kind of.
I feel like it's also complicated for us if we're playing on Clash, because I think we also have the content element on there.
Oh, yeah,
which
we can.
It's a little awkward if you just scoop in the middle of a content video. Although I will say, even though Krim's defending me, and I appreciate it, I'm not sure that I agree, because the way I view Commander is, I want the entire table to have a good time. If I'm playing 60-card formats, I want just me to have a good time, and I feel not even a little bit bad about blood mooning you or stacking you or doing whatever miserable thing to you. But in Commander, I want us all to have fun. As you have said before, it's like nerd golf, right? We want to get together and have a good time with our buddies. And so I actually think I do bear some responsibility to make sure that I'm not monopolizing the time at the table to such an extent that it's actually ruining the Commander Night for everyone else. Because what's the point of doing Commander Night if I'm having fun and none of the rest of you are having fun? Why are we even doing it? Well, like, that defeats the whole purpose of Commander Night, right?
Obviously, it's a little more nuanced than that. But, like, the thing here is, if your deck only has these turns, then that's a different story, right? If your deck is only 90-minute turns, that's a miserable deck to play against, right? Yeah. That is not golf with the buddies. That's... I've forced you into my car and you have to listen to my terrible mixtape. You know what I mean? Like,
there's some archetypes that I feel like kind of get away with it. Like Enchantress. Enchantress, I used to be a big Auras fan. Like, I love playing Auras because I thought like that was a really cool way of white. When white was not good, like 6 years ago, I used to run a lot of Auras because white was really good for Auras. And that was a good way to like draw cards and stuff. But I've since moved away with it. And the last time I played an Enchantress deck, before finally giving it up entirely, was that Corona deck. I played Corona, Anora's deck and stuff. And I feel like that's like a problem with just Enchantress in general, right? Like every Enchantress deck is going to have like six to 10 plus cards that say like, whenever you make an enchantment, whenever an enchantment enters, you draw a card. And what does that mean? That means you cannot plan out your full turn in advance, right? You have to... Wait, 1 second. Is there something on my screen?
I don't know. It popped up for a second. Viewfinder.
Yeah, something is very inactive.
It said, yeah.
Okay, well,
it's gone now. It just popped up for a second. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if it shows up to us though on here, that means it shows up in the local.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a little Easter egg.
It's authentic.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I don't think anyone's going to notice.
Because I was like, wait, the subtitles don't match what Tomer's saying. Hold on, wait a second.
Yeah, so Enchantress like kind of has like this problem inherently built into the archetype, I feel like, because you have all these cards. The vast majority of Enchantress decks are all about these cards that say like, whenever you play an enchantment, you draw a card. And then when you see a new card, that means your entire game plan that turn has been altered. You have to reassess. So if you do that a bunch of times, like, you're just going to, you have to be taking a long turn. You can't really practice the perfect turn in advance because you're drawing so many cards. You have so much mana. Every single time you play another card, you're drawing more cards at more different things to do on your turn. So it's like, if an Enchantress deck is like doing its thing, it's just going to always have a really long turn, right? Like, I've always seen that. Like, every single Enchantress player, like, it doesn't really matter. They're always going to be taking a super long turn.
Yeah, I am the perpetrator of this problem with a lot of my decks, especially a friend of mine, I found out, also built a Manuel's Kaga deck, and his is flavorful, mm-hmm. and I tried to describe mine, and I described it as a chain reaction, and then I noticed, like, oh, yeah, that is exactly what it does. Like, it does one thing, and then I have to go through this chain reaction of triggers, and it's just what the deck does. There's one thing to mitigate this, and that is goldfishing your deck. Like, if you know exactly what you're doing, you draw a bunch of cards and you get more options, but at least you can go through the motions.
At least you know what the cards do.
And there's one other tip. I gave this tip in the podcast before, and it's not min-maxing, but it helps for this. It is just button mash. You don't need to play optimal. If you notice that, oh my god, I'm taking a huge turn, just cast. I have 3 mana, I have 10 cards, whatever. The perfect line is somewhere in there. I'm not gonna find it. I'm gonna find it on the way home if I think about this and I lost the game. Oh, I will find it, but not now. And I'm just gonna cast, draw, pass if I have to. But don't.
That advice mostly works unless you're a combo deck where
I mean, a
storm deck has to actually do
as I should.
At least combo decks, like, if you're going to always win with like A plus B plus Z, then you should, like, I think goldfishing, like Phil said, is going to be the key to making that go fast. Because, like, a combo doesn't require your opponents, like, having, like, interacting with your opponents any different way. Like, you know how the deck is going to win, and you're just, like, figuring out how do I go through the motions to get to that win.
I'm curious. So I think that's a very interesting topic. But I was going to use Phil and also Krim as examples of people who I think play decks that could be decks that monopolize the time at the table. But because they have experience with their decks and cards, it often doesn't feel that way to me. Like, Krim, when I see someone play a Sensei's Divining Top in the wild at, like, a Magic Con, I kind of cringe, and I'm like, oh, God, this game is going to take forever. But when Krim plays a Sensei's Divining Top, I'm actually like, okay, like, Krim's going to spin his top quick. He's done it a million times. I'm not concerned about that. Or, like, when some new player builds the Token Academy Manufacturer Machine deck, I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to take hours. But then when Phil does it, he executes it relatively quickly. How much do you think experience and skill level play into this? Like, is that any part of the time equity issue? Is just, like, people not being experienced enough with their deck and archetype, maybe? And if you're really experienced, you can get away with it. Like, does that solve the problem?
I think it does a lot, but it's not, it shouldn't discourage you from playing the deck. Like, it is fine if you start, like, what are you gonna do, start the deck or start playing the deck and know what to do? Like, you gotta start.
Well, that's
somewhere.
How you learn, right? Yeah,
so that's it's not a, like, a knock on these, on people who don't play the deck yet, but you should get some reps in goat fishing before you play it for the first time, I think. Yeah,
and just like throw in finishers. There. Like, I feel like, okay, you want to play Enchantress, and I feel like Enchantress or Ghoul is going to do their dirtle mode. Draw a card, play an enchantment, draw three cards, play an enchantment, draw three cards. Just be mindful of that. And if you see yourself taking up all the time at the table, run more finishers, like, even if it's not optimal. Like Phil said, like, yeah, sometimes if you're just, like, if you're taking a long turn, you don't have to, like, overthink every single play because we're not, like, we're not at Worlds or whatever. But, like, also same thing with just, like, run a couple more finishers. Okay, they're not the most optimal, right? Because you could win with a Mold Drifter if you have enough turns and stuff, you know? But, like, just think of the rest of the table and maybe throw in, like, two more finishers, you know? Just be, like, instead of, like, how do I draw more cards? Think of, like, how am I going to close out the game now that I'm ahead.
It's the Modo technique, how you have the clock on Modo, so sometimes you got to play more win cons to actually win before your clock runs out with your combo deck. I want to ask you, Tomer, so far we focused on, like, the 15-minute turn, right? Like, someone has this really long, non-deterministic turn to close out the game. But what about more stealthy time inequity? Like, I used to play a lot of blink decks. In my blink decks, I wouldn't usually have a 30-minute turn, but my every turn is probably 10 minutes when your every turn is probably 2 minutes. So over the course of several turns, I'm still using a huge percentage of time at the table just because of how my archetype works and I'm blinking things and then this trigger resolves. Is that also a problem? Or are we mostly focused on, like, you take this one big turn, everyone's staring at you for a half hour while you play, or is taking 5 minutes each turn when everyone else is taking 1 minute, you're still using a huge percentage of time compared to the rest of the table. Is that also an issue of time equity?
I think it's something you can be mitigating with just, like, being fast. If, like, blink, I feel like, you know, if he's like, no, I'm going to blink a bunch of stuff and I'm going to resolve it very quickly, I feel like that's something just with more playtesting you can kind of get through. Like, your Norn deck, too, also will be blinking on your opponent's turns, right? So you're going to have triggers and abilities on your opponent's turns, but you can just be like, all right, every single turn, I'm going to make a treasure from this. I'm going to draw a card off this. All right.
Found, like, with decks like that, even the way you set up your battlefield matters, where you can kind of pile all your things that trigger each turn, and, like, the being intentional with how you set up your battlefield can help you minimize some of the impacts of those triggers in those long turns.
Another thing, talking about its opponent's turn, especially if your commander doesn't draw cards while it's doing its thing, use the opponent's turn to just go through your lines. Maybe it's even good if they take some time, because then you can think it through. You don't even need to button mash. If you just check your mana, check your options, then you draw one card that changes the equation maybe, but at least you only have to ask yourself, do I cast this card or not? And then yes or no, and if no, just do the plan you thought about while the opponent was doing their thing. Yeah, that might mean you didn't listen to them too much, but at some point, I don't expect anybody to follow my lowness lines anyway. So maybe it helps,
but then there's still the problem of, like, okay, what if I'm drawing 15 cards over the span of
my
turn?
That's what I mean. If you're playing Kobold,
you know, it's like Beast Whisperer and Chula Lane and the Enchantresses and all that stuff. That's, like, the real thing that bogs things down, because you can't really plan your turn ahead of time when you have those cards.
How much?
Also, you are socializing probably every second of the way. Right.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of hard.
Can you plan and, you know, yap it up with the homies? You know what I mean? So, like, that is the one minor problem with that.
I go in full sweat mode. I'm like, don't talk to me.
Nobody
don't
talks.
Ask me about
my
turn.
Don't talk.
do you guys
I'm in gamer
not talking,
mode?
I talked about this a bit, but, and that might be a little rude, but if you think about your lines in your turn too much, it gets crazy. Like, if you take a long turn and then take, like, 30 seconds of just thinking, just like, oh, come on, you're already winning right here. Just do something.
Just
and then,
kill us.
Oh, no, I think I see the line. I'm like, okay.
that does get obnoxious, too. I'm curious, how much do you guys think modern card design plays into this? Like, in a couple of different ways. On one hand, I know, Tomer, you mentioned made for commander cards that just do everything. So your Ice Tilt Explorer is doing all these triggers, and that's going to make the turn longer. So I think that's part of it. But also, just like the amount of words on a card, like just reading a modern card, there's so many sentences on it that that's going to take more time, especially if you're not super familiar with the deck or you're playing with new cards or the new set. Like, how much of this is a card design problem as well as a player problem?
I can make an entire 1 hour rant on just modern kind of designs. But yeah, I think that is also a problem too. Like the one that still like sticks to me as in like, why is this a thing? There was a Lorwyn Eclipsed legendary. I think it's like a rare, it's hybrid, is it? And it's like, it has a vivid mechanic on your upkeep, you impulse draw equal to the number of colored permanents you control. And it's like, it's like 50 words. It's like a freaking, it's a PhD thesis to just be like, and you draw 2 to 3 cards.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Why? Yeah. Why can't you just say, like, on your upkeep, draw 2 or something like that? Like, why? Why is it so much?
I feel like maybe
it's because, like, there's so many new cards coming out. It feels like the author is running away from the editor type scenario. You know, like, when an author, like, gets a little bit too big and they have too much creative control. And it used to be, like, the editor is kind of, like, holding back a lot of the wordiness and stuff. Like, George R. R. Martin talking about food in his books. And it's, like, and then the later books is just, like, he has too much creative control. And that's, like, a 50 pages on what the king ate for dinner or something like that. It feels like that kind of, it's like, if they just had a little bit more time to edit down the templating over here, it could have been better. Do you think that's a reason? Is like, they just don't have enough time to kind of like slim down the words? I don't know.
I gotta say though, they kind of fixed the problem of shuffling when ramping. Like stuff like Clifftop Lookout or Mutable Explorer. Like Clifftop Lookout flips cards from the top of your deck until you find a land. Mutable Explorer just creates a token that's a land or the Overlord. That helps. So they think about it a bit, but then they create Trulane or Korvault. Wait, these are both from the same set, and it's quite a while ago, but whatever. We all know that every card these days is like a textbook, and sometimes there's a backside. And that certainly doesn't help, because all these things trigger and have to resolve somehow.
Because you have a deck full of them, right? Like, if every single card in your deck is now doing 50 different things, and they have a backside that also does 50 different things, obviously it's going to slow down the game, right? Like, I remember one of the things that I kind of enjoyed from pre-modern, like there's a lot of issues with playing like just pre-modern, very slow games, too slow. But I did like that, like a card like Ancient Craving is just, it says draw 3 cards and that's it, full stop. It doesn't have to be like draw 3 cards, then make 5 treasures whenever you deal combat damage. Then if you have 10 or more treasures, it flips. And then the backside is more 50 different words of like, you can now tap treasures for double mana. Whenever you tap a treasure for mana, you exile the top 5 cards of your library. Until the next turn, you can play those cards. If you play those cards from exile, you will then make a treasure. And it's like, stop. Just let the cards do one thing, because then when you have 99 cards in your library that are all like these word soup cards, obviously it's gonna make things a lot slower to get through.
And yeah, I guess mechanics like spree.
Maybe a little bit getting a little off topic though on top of stuff that we recommended. I think this is more like stuff that is like design things you should not do. Wizards of the Coast, please.
I mean, even just like, I love MDFCs. I some of my favorite cards, but even just physically, the fact that you have to remove them from the sleeve and flip them over and put them back down, that's like a little bit of friction there that's going to take a little bit more time compared to a non-MDFC. And if you do that many times during a commander game, that's going to end up taking more time. I'm curious. We've talked a lot about time equity. What are some other things that can ruin the commander night that people do? Time equity is definitely a big one, and a lot goes into that. But I think there's some other things that can ruin commander nights. Do you guys got any ideas of other stuff that would fall under there? I hear you're laughing, Krim. What's something else that can ruin commander night?
Well, time equity matters, right? And I think that this is something else that also ruins the game, but it kind of falls under time equity. It's that I see a lot of times in every game, people just don't attack. There's everyone's wide open.
That's true.
And they're just like,
and I do it.
So I'm just like, hey, I'm wide open. If you just want to hit me, like, at least hit somebody. Please hit somebody, even if it's me, right?
Progress
just,
the game.
Yeah, progress the game. I mean, and I get it that you don't want to. You don't want to draw the iron.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, well, if there's nobody on board to contest you, there's no crackback, right? There's there's a lot of like potential what ifs, right, and things that could happen. But you know what? I'd like to believe. Worry about what I can see, right? And as I see you have nothing, I'm going to hit you. Until you give me a reason to not hit you, you know what I mean? Like, that's one of those things. So I don't know. I see a lot of groups, a lot of people just don't want to attack because they don't want to get the ire of somebody else at the table. But it's like, the board is all the politicking you need until you're at a standstill. So that is the way I would look at it, and I think there's a lot of damage left on tables.
I feel like this is also a design issue. I'm blaming WotC a lot on this video. I did not expect to do so, but I'm doing it again. I feel I don't think it's the player's fault for being like, I'm not attacking when I don't have any incentive to do so. Like, obviously, lowering everybody's life total is an incentive, but also maintaining your life total is good to you. So it's like, well, I don't want to attack because then I'm going to be attacked back and stuff. And also politically, like, if I'm smacking you for 5 damage, now you're more likely to attack me back over somebody else. So like, there's incentive not to hit people. And I feel like maybe
there's no incentive to leave the person that has the ability to hit people alone, right? So, I mean, no matter what, you've already kind of got a mark on you. You may as well just go out swinging. And, like, this kind of lines up with threat assessment. I know that threat assessment is something that I think is much, it's more, it comes naturally when you've played, like, every day, right? And that makes sense. But, like, threat assessment is very important. And I don't think that, yes, cards may have some new things that terrify you and they connect. But, like, at the same time, do it, I guess. Like, we're progressing the game, right? We're gonna get to the next one if you kill me sooner. So I don't know. I think that attacking, threat assessment, all of this all kind of goes hand in hand to me.
What do you guys think about, like, so the reason why I was like, I think it's a design issue is I feel like there should just be, like, the most powerful cards in Commander and multiplayer should be, I feel, cards that require you to attack. Like, I feel like cards that say, like, whenever you attack, you get, like, a treasure. Whenever you deal combat damage, something good happens. I feel like, design-wise, those cards should be more powerful than ones that, like, the equivalent that don't attack and deal combat damage. Just because then you're going to be more incentivized to swing. And also, I like mechanics that are incentivized attacking. Like, we always talk about, like, how Monarchy is so freaking good. And, like, Initiative, I think, not as good, but I feel like the idea of, you know, giving people advantages for hitting is a good one. So, like, I always felt like, what if we had, like, a house rule of just, like, the Monarchy enters in every single game? Would that kind of solve the issue, you don't want to make it so that
you're taking the incentive away from playing alternate win cons, though. That is very magic, right? So to make something just naturally better because the aggression, I mean, I don't know. I, as someone who plays those alternative win con decks, right? Like, I think that you should, you know, they should be about the same. I don't think one should be prioritized over the other, right, is what I mean. Like, I one should not be better.
I think it would be very interesting. I've always been, like, put the Monarch in every game. That'd be an awesome house rule. I do wonder how it would play out in practice. Like, I think it would be good, but then I also wonder if it would, like, would it be too much of an incentive? Would it be so powerful you all of a sudden start playing, like, bad one drops just because stealing the Monarch turn one is, like, worth it because you want to start drawing cards right away? Like, how much of an impact would it actually have if that was part of it? So I think it would be very interesting to try out. I think it would be a positive, but then maybe there's some chance it changes deck building too much and becomes a negative.
Yeah.
Another one. Sure.
You imagine everybody just plays Flying Men because, you know,
you got to get the Monarch.
You got to get the Monarch. Get the crown. Yeah.
I think another one that ties into time equity, and I think this is a big one that can ruin Commander Knights, is just having power level mismatches with your decks where, like, for whatever reason, you don't do the conversation first, or just misunderstandings because players are bad at judging their decks. I guess brackets has maybe helped to some extent, but we've even seen with a bracket system that a three isn't just a three, right? You can build a three that's incredibly busted or a bracket three deck that's very tame. So in mismatch power levels, I feel like that in some ways becomes the same issue as time equity, where if your deck is just way mismatched power level, either too strong or too weak, you're kind of wasting your time even playing the game to begin with. Like, you're either going to face roll the table or you're going to do nothing, and neither one's going to be a fun experience. So I think that's another big one that can ruin a commander night. Maybe it's less of a problem at a dedicated commander night that you're doing with the same group every week, because eventually you're going to kind of get a sense of each other's power level. Like, we don't spend too much time talking about power level on Clash because we've been playing decks against each other for 10 years now, and we kind of have a general sense of, like, what a Clash deck looks like. But we still have games where, like, there are mismatch where someone, there was a game where Morgan showed up with like a bracket one style deck and everyone else was playing like bracket three style decks. And I kind of felt bad about it to some extent. I was like, oh, it's just not like a great experience for, it doesn't feel good beating the bracket one player, and it doesn't feel good to be the bracket one player if everyone else is playing bracket three decks. So how much do you think that goes into this? Is that something that ruins Commander Knights, just having a mismatch in power levels?
I mean, for Morgan's thing, we picked the decks ahead of time, so he knew what was coming into.
That is true.
But yeah, I feel like brackets are kind of like the best way to assist with that. But obviously, like having a talk at the beginning, and then like whenever I go to the game store or something, I'll be like, what type of game are we looking at? Are we looking for something like chill, lower power, or are we looking for something a little bit more powerful? And that's basically it. And then we go from there.
It can,
but yeah, I think mismatches are going to always happen because we're playing casual, right? Like if we're all playing like, oh, let's all play CDH. Everybody knows what that means. And then you just bring out your CDH deck. But if you're like casual, there's such a huge spectrum. There's always going to be some mismatch. I feel like, I don't know how else to mitigate that other than like talk to the group first, you know?
Yeah.
That can also be bad matchups though. Like even if you, let's say my Lonus deck is a three, or like bracket three, but then if the opponent plays something that shocks, just regularly shocks, I say, well, and now I'm down to one, because if you shock Lonus twice, it costs six and I need it. So besides this mismatching, which, I mean, this can happen, it also can just happen that you run into the wrong commander and then you sit there and say, whoop, feel like I'm stacked. It isn't stacks if you get removed, I think, but it feels like you're doing nothing if you spend the first six turns just repeatedly casting your commander.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. Oh, it's the worst.
Unless your commander is a commander that deserves.
She deserves to die.
Otherwise, I'm taking all the time, and then we're doing another problem that ruins. So the commander,
maybe the shock commander is actually the hero we needed, actually.
Yep.
or you have a partner that immediately removes your commander upon it immediately arriving on the board. Not going to say anyone in specific, but
I'm not thinking about a partner either.
Yep. Funny story, by the way, not the opposite of ruining Commander Night. It is very funny. Every Commander Night, when you have couples who play together, or you know what I mean, or friends who play together, you would assume that they're going to team up and like for you, like everyone around them. That is never the case. That's a lie. That is a lie. Couples go and remove each other's stuff first because they know each other the most.
This is how
they know each other's decks.
I'm glad that it's the same thing with you, Krim and Lydia.
Lydia just like blows my stuff up immediately. She's like, I don't need to hear it from you. I'm gonna just let you know this is the Krim check, and I'm like, okay, I understand.
There was one time I didn't kill Rose. Like every single time we play together, I'll try to kill Rodrigo first, and almost always either one of us dies first. We're the first ones out of the game. And there's one time it was like turn six, and I was swinging at everybody. And he was playing Lonus, obviously. Phil, you understand. You understand the problem of Lonus. And I was accidentally killing him because I was like sending six at him. And he's like, oh, and I die. He's like, oh, no, it's like turn six. I don't want to kill you like right now. So I'll just swing at you for like four or something like that. And I'll swing the six at somebody else. Literally, he untaps. He plays Urza. And then he plays Shrieking Drake and crumbles off and win. I'm like, this is, that's it. Never again.
Should have killed
him. You die. Every time I have the opportunity for you to die, you will die
always. Going this, I would tie this into something that can kind of ruin the experience. I'm not opposed to it, but there are ways to do it that kind of suck, and that is takesy-backsies that lead to, oh, actually, I win now. So in this case, it was like, oh, no, I'm not going to attack you. And then, oh, okay, you're not. Well, I win then. And then it's like, okay. Or if you have, like, your huge combo turn, and then after, like, 10 minutes, you say, well, actually, I know I'm going to do this, actually, and then take another 5 minutes and then win because you could have, like, nobody's going to deny your takesy-backsies, especially if it's the same face, I'd say.
Especially if you skip, yell worlds. How can anyone say no?
Worlds. You just yell worlds.
The magic words. So this, while it is a casual format. Of course, you can takesy-backsies, especially if you don't know your deck well and stuff. But there are ways of doing it. Like Rodrigo there going like, oh, you don't kill me? Well, this was a combo.
He drew the takesy-backsying. So,
and then this leading to something that I'm not even going to say it ruined it because it's kind of funny. I'm also biased because it was Lowness. But takesy-backsies can be bad. They can also be very good and lead to learning moments where you can finally do the thing because you remembered it, even if you remembered it a little late. But you got to watch out with these.
Like, I would say there, to kind of piggyback on that, though, there is a point where I think it kind of ruins the Commander Knight if you're loaded with takesy-backsies.
Right? Like, too many.
I think it is a casual format and that is great. I think it is. I do not think you need to be a stickler about this, but I think you on the other end of this, where like if every single action is a takesy backsy, just let it kind of goes with the you don't need to play optimally, just let it through. It's okay, it's fine.
It's
who cares, right?
Format. You can punt once in a while, like, it's fine. I punt all the time.
I'm out here having NFL tryouts all game long.
I'm 100%
punting all day long.
Backsies, but at the same time, if you're like trying way too hard. Then it's like, well, it's casual. Like, we don't have to care. Like, sometimes I'll be like, oh, I missed whatever trigger. I'm not going to ask for a take. Like, sometimes I'll ask for a takesy backsy. You feel like I just literally did it. And, but like, if it's like, well, like, you know, a turn has passed, you know, like I passed a turn. Oh, wait, could I have done this? It's like, well, like, I don't really care. Nah, I don't care.
It also slows the game down. Especially if you both have to kind of recreate the board.
Some people like want to like take backsies their previous turn. It's like, well.
Oh, yeah.
Who cares? Honestly, well, next game it'll be different. It's fine.
I think, if you're ahead, a takesy-backsy is kind of like, well, you're kind of already doing the thing. And just accept that you're not doing it quite as much, but you're still winning. So,
I have one that also, I think, ruins a Commander Knight.
What were you going to say, Tomer? Did you have a topic?
I was going to switch the topic, so I don't know if you want to.
No, I was going to switch the topic too. So go ahead. What were you going to switch the topic to, Tomer?
I was going to be another one. I think this is the cardinal rule that ruins Commander Knights for me. And it's a classic Crim quote. And it's, what is this?
You find it inactive. That is the,
is that what Tomer just said? I will never.
Sorry, audio.
That's the thing that ruins. I will never get tired of making that joke, Tomer. I am so sorry.
No, the thing I wanted to bring up, the thing that absolutely ruins a Commander Knight is don't be a wiener. You know, like nobody wants a wiener at the table when you're getting too upset about the game, when you're just being super negative the entire time, and it's like. Win or lose, nobody likes a wiener at the party, you know? Just don't be a wiener, you know?
That's a party foul, actually.
I also think, like, the exact opposite is also the most, like, the best thing you could be at a commander's table. Like, I've played against people who will bring out, like, the most cutthroat decks and absolutely stomp the table, but they're complete sweethearts about it, you know? They're just sociable, nice people. Who cares? Yeah. You know, like somebody said, like, I really want to play this Stax deck. And like, they were the nicest person about it. And they played Stax. It was an awful deck. It was literally Turgrid. but like,
it's not Stax.
It was fine because the person had a good attitude, gave us a fair warning about everything, apologized a lot. They didn't have to. But like, you know, it's just like having good vibes. Like, remember, you're just sitting down. And it's a social environment. You're just having a party with your friends playing cards. in front of you, but you're still at a social event. And as long as you're a good person at your social events, everybody's going to have a relatively good time. But if you're a wiener, it doesn't matter what you're playing. It doesn't matter what your opponents are playing. The vibes are going to be bad. The vibes are going to be bad. Don't be a wiener. That's what it says.
Try to be the kind of player that you would want to play with, I guess. It's kind of as simple as that. Would you have fun playing with yourself? Yes or no? If the answer is no, then maybe make some changes. Yeah, that is a big one, though.
Everything that you... Okay. Yep.
What?
Nothing. What? Just go. You're good.
What? Okay. I got another one I wanted to ask you guys about, because this is one I see a lot that people bring up about ruining Commander Knights, and I don't know if I even fully like grasp or understand this, as weird as that sounds. What about kingmaking? I hear people talking about kingmaking being something that ruins their Commander Knights. So kingmaking, the idea is you're about to die, or you're on the way out, or you're not in a position where you can win the game, and you make actions that can swing the game in someone else's favor, right? You're going to die, and you swing everything at player A instead of player B, and you kind of determine who ends up winning the game, even though you're not going to be able to win the game yourself. Is that bad form? Like, does it matter if you're getting revenge on someone who maybe you're about to die because Tomer hit you for a ton of damage? Is it wrong to swing out at Tomer even though you're definitely not going to win the game because he's the one that took away your life total? Like, I've never really had a firm grasp on this, but I hear people bring it up all the time. So what do you guys think about kingmaking as a thing that ruins Commander Knight?
I think the thing you specifically called out there, like, oh, he's the one who killed me, so I'm going to take him down with me. I think this is generally accepted, especially if it's an established play group and you make fun about it. I think the problem is the same problem I have with group hug. If somebody gets made a king, like if somebody says, like, I don't know, you get 10 treasures. And then the person who was working for their win until that turn is like, well, I was doing so much and now you get this gifted. And then the person who got it gifted, that's like the group hug problem, is like, well, I didn't work for this. I built my deck to do this by itself, but now you gave me all of this, so I can't really be proud of going off because I wouldn't have done it without this. So I think kingmaking is kind of similar to this. It's like it is kind of ruining the integrity of the game, but with kingmaking in specific, or especially, you can soothe it with dialogue. I think it is always very context dependent on kingmaking. And we get comments like this on Clash, but I rarely feel like there's kingmaking on Clash that is unjustified.
Where do you guys think the line is, Tomer and Krim? Like, if I'm about to die and I have a couple removal spells in my hand and I fire them off, is that bad form? Should I just hold them in hand and die with them in hand because I don't want to have an impact on who is actually going to win the game because I know I'm out of it? Like, is that what I'm supposed to do?
I mean, if you want to fire off the removal spells and it's just like rapid fire at random directions, then, you know, whatever, right? That's fine. But if it's just like, hey, Phil has done nothing all game, I'm going to just remove literally his whole deck on my way out. Yeah. That kind of makes no sense, right?
But what if Phil killed me a few episodes again, Krim? Then it's okay.
You wouldn't believe this, but prior games don't have an effect on future games.
What if your partner removed you a few turns games ago?
Well, then, hold on.
No. Was only commandeered it, but...
I mean, if anything, that means you know there will be another game. I don't know. I guess like kingmaking is such a weird thing because there's shades of it that are acceptable that we've kind of mentioned, and then there's just a lot of it that is like, I think, outright BM. Like, if I'm about to connect, I have Enduring Curiosity and you die from this, right? But you decide to concede before my damage happens, so I draw nothing. That is more like a salt scoop than it is.
No, that shouldn't even be allowed.
Conceding is sorcery speed.
Yeah, conceding is sorcery speed is exactly the main thing, right? Or any variation of removing yourself, I think, is slightly BM. But other than that, I think all the other things you'd mentioned is fine, right? You fire off a bunch of removal spells on your way out. Hey, I get it. You did nothing all game, or you died. You want to make an impact. Sure. You know, do whatever. throw a dart. See what happens, you know?
Yeah, I might as well leave an impact on the way out the door. But what do you think, Homer?
Usually how I see it is, usually the person who's about to die is like, well, I'm going to die, so I'm going to take, like, somebody who was either taking me out of the game or was, like, stacking me out of the game. I'll fire off a removal on the way out. I think that's fine. What I'm trying to do a little bit more, and I kind of think is maybe a little bit better in terms of, like, trying to increase your win percentage, is what I try to do is, if I do have, like, a removal spell that I can fire off on the way out, I will tell the person who's about to kill me that. I'll be like, look, if you go and take me out, which you can, I will try to take out one of your things on the way out. Because, like, I'm going to do that anyway, but it does give me, a small window of maybe not dying, right? So I can be like, well, if you really need that thing.
I feel like
thing,
you're goading the person.
Yeah, you
at
can
that
kill
point.
Me. You can kill me, but, like, if you really need that thing, then I'm going to remove it. So maybe that'll get me a thing. And then when you do decide to take me out, then I don't even think it's kingmaking at that point to use my removal. It's like, well, I'm just backing up my threat. But, like, I'm using it to try and not die. I'm using it to try and win. So
it's,
I feel like,
always fine.
That's, like, a better
to kill
way
the
of
person killing you, though. I think that is, nobody would complain. It's like self-defense, literally.
Yeah, all right. You got to be able to do that, right? If you've been attacking me all game, I might as well hit you on the way out a little bit, at least.
Of course.
You're also blocking, even if they...
take out as many creatures as possible on the way out, for sure. Like, I think that's just part of the risk of taking somebody out, no?
Yeah, because I've wondered about that, too, where you, like, have two big boards and there's an attack and one person's going to die. And a lot of times we'll be like, well, I'll block however I can do maximum damage to the person that's attacking me and get as much of your stuff off the board. That's not kingmaking, right? That's just, like, playing magic. Like,
yes.
That's what you
that's
should do.
That's just playing magic. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
You shouldn't feel bad for playing magic. is the
Am
main
I allowed
thing.
To block here, Krim? Is it okay if I actually block? Yeah. Yes.
Whoa, bro.
I know I'm killing you, but that's very rude that you're taking out my creatures when I'm doing it. Like,
yeah.
It's like, wow.
I have one last question I want to bring up to you guys about this. So earlier when we were talking about time equity, we talked about some decks that can lead to time equity issues, right? Storm decks, people think of as decks like that, or the KCI decks, these big loopy decks. Are there any decks or archetypes that are just off limits and by themselves ruin Commander Knights? Or is it all a matter of context and your play group? And if you talk like a group hug, I know some of us really hate group hug, or chaos. I know some of us really hate chaos. Does just someone
just
show
Tomer.
Up to Commander Night with
someone.
A chaos
you just
deck
say
or a group hug deck?
Someone
does that,
hates.
Does that ruin Commander Night? I'm curious, are there some archetypes that just by existing ruin Commander Knights?
Tomer kind of mentioned it earlier. I don't think there really is one, because even stacks, I've had a friend bring over stacks and he played it in the weirdest way possible where he accidentally stacks himself out with us. So, but the main thing here is it is a fun adventure no matter the deck with friends. So I guess it doesn't really matter what you play, but this is more of like a, because when we say Commander Knight, I'm assuming with friends, not at a local or something like that. Like, if it's a pickup game, maybe people aren't as, you know, down, right? But if it's with your group of friends, no one really cares what you play. You can play whatever you want. It is a lot about the mentality and, like, the vibes of just hanging out. It is just like, hey, I play pickup basketball with my friends. I'm god-awful, you know? We have a friend that's, like, really, like, just taller than me. He's, like, 6'8".
Record one.
And everyone's like, dude, when you guard him, he never scores. Like, yeah, because I literally foul him, like, 30 seconds every 32. Every time he takes a step, there's, like, 100 fouls on him. I'm, like, latched onto his back. Like, do you guys not see this? But, like, we don't care because it's, like, fun, right? Like, so I think that is the best way to do it is, like, if you want to play it, it's, like, a pickup game of basketball. You don't know some people at the court. You want to just go hang out and play? Sure, you go do that, right? Like, but there's an etiquette to it. And I think that's really what matters. Funny enough, I don't think there's an archetype you need to worry about. It's more of you, the person, and things you're doing that will ruin a Commander Knight more than any kind of deck you would play. Like, if you're just on the phone the whole time, like, you know what I mean? Like, that is one of the things. It's like, do you know why your turn's taking a little longer than usual? Because you're also half, like, I don't know, but like playing Wordle while you're taking your turn, right?
Bingo Wiener.
Being a wiener.
Don't be a wiener.
Yeah, exactly.
You're at a social event. You should be paying attention and interacting with the people that are your friends that you've decided to spend time with.
Exactly. Yeah. That is where I think that it more important than any deck you will bring to any table will be you, the person, and what you do while you're playing.
Sure. I totally agree 100%, but also chaos.
No. You see, I have a friend where we both loved chaos, so we asked our two other friends, can we both play our chaos decks? And then we had there were two chaos decks, and it was truly
5 hours later.
We loved it so much, Toba, we 1v1'd for fun. Like, just two chaos.
Just 1v1 chaos.
Like if nothing everybody worked. Opts in for chaos, and everybody's chill about it, the vibes are good.
But
I'll be on the sidelines, you know? I'll be there. But like, allow me to viewfinder not available.
Press any button.
Can you just say it once, Tomer, please?
I'm curious backwards. But like, if all your friends want to play chaos and you don't want to, are you being the wiener by not joining your friends?
You might be the wiener. You're in the party pooper now.
I'm sorry. I was sick that week. Wait, what about all the... Like, I will still do it sometimes. You know, like, we've done it on Commander Clash.
Oh, we
and
make
I was
him
there
every once in a while, yeah.
All right. I've tried not to be the wiener. I will still complain when I'm in the game. When you cast a third scramble versus that game,
oh, so
I
good.
Will let out a sigh at the very least. You know,
man.
But. Yeah, but
it's been
you know,
a minute since we've
really
had a chaos
sigh?
Week. It might,
yeah, you know,
it might be time. Let us know in the comments if we should get another chaos week on the schedule.
God. I have a
you gotta keep Tomer honest.
For me.
He's had it too good for too long.
Phil really likes chaos, so I don't want to deprive him of my seat
Make
for
sure
that
you do
one.
It this season, please. Yeah,
seasonal chaos week. God.
Anyway, everyone, I think we're getting to the end of the cast. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about things that ruin Commander Knights, time equity, on the way out the door today? Last chance. Anybody.
Please do not bring open top drinks.
Oh, my God.
That's a good one.
Like,
yeah.
And
that's a
good sit one. It right next to the table.
You know what's so funny? So
it never happens.
At
so
my
fun,
Commander Knights, yeah. It's like it's at a game store. And it's like €5 to participate, but you get like a voucher for a free drink. So literally everybody has like an open can of like pop or whatever on the table at any given time. I've so far no spillage.
That's the
and it's
store
been,
trying
what, like
to get you
three
to come
years.
Back to buy singles.
Wow. Yeah, that's all part of the plan.
That's the store where I'm like, well, maybe I should double sleep. I'm like, yeah. So it's like, I'm a single sleeve guy, you know, like I'm a big single sleeve believer, but that's the only time where I'm like, you know what, I am playing a little bit of fire over here. Yeah. I love the store, by the way, and I love the free drink, but yeah.
That is risky. That is risky for sure. Anyway, everyone, I think that brings us to the end of our Things That'll Ruin Your Commander Knights podcast. So have you ever had anything ruin your Commander Knight? What really drives you crazy in a game of Commander? What do you think about the time equity thing? Let us know in the comments, and we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have a spectacular week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.